Morning, Mr. Hayden.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Do you care to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, sir. Five minutes.
5 minutes, yes, sir.
May it please the Court, my name is Charles Hayden, and I represent Jay Hoon Kim, who was convicted of one count of possession of a firearm after having been convicted of a felony. The issue here is whether or not the circuit court erred in admitting the document purporting to show a prior conviction from the Hampton Juvenile Court on page 26 of the appendix. That's the document in question. It says that on the date of the trial, on June 25th, 2008, the juvenile was present, his mother was present, and that he pled guilty to all charges. It does not have the box check for attorney present. And then it goes on to indicate at the disposition he was sentenced to 30 days post-dispositional confinement, all suspended for a period of 12 months. And that shows that he did have the counsel at that hearing.
But the court had gone through and found notations elsewhere in the record, though, indicating that a public defender had, in fact, been present, even though the box was not checked. Isn't that correct?
Well, they found that he had a counsel at prior hearings. They found that he had counsel at subsequent hearings, but not at the hearing on the trial date. I would note.
Does this come down essentially to whether or not the presumption of regularity applies?
I think it comes. It goes to more than that. There is. I note, for example, that it's possible to plead guilty without counsel. If he shows up on June 25th, the counsel doesn't show, he has a right to plead guilty. There's no requirement that he have to have counsel present on that date. So if the court speaks solely through its order and it's a presumption of regular, that he has an uncounseled conviction, it's a proper conviction, but the case law of this court, I believe in the James case, goes on to note that where conviction proves only a fact of conviction, it may be presumed valid for purposes of conviction. That's the Nicely case, 25 Virginia App 575. However, where a conviction order on its face proves incarceration, it may not be used to enhance punishment where the defendant was uncounseled. That's the Griswold case of the Virginia Supreme Court. That holding's at 252 Virginia 116, and that was relying on the Burgett versus Texas U.S. Supreme Court case from 1967. And the James case of this court in 1994, 18 Virginia Act 746, this court specifically held the Commonwealth has the burden of persuasion to prove that the prior conviction was counseled.
That change, if the presumption of regularity applies, doesn't it then become the defendant's burden to show that it was uncounseled?
That presumption of regularity, I would quote from the James case in response. We hold that the Commonwealth satisfies its burden of going forward when it produces a properly certified conviction from a court of competent jurisdiction which appears on its face to be a valid judgment, provided that in all felony cases and those misdemeanor proceedings where imprisonment resulted, there is evidence establishing that the defendant was represented by or properly waived counsel in the earlier proceeding. Upon such a showing by the Commonwealth, the doctrine of presumption of regularity is then applied once you show it's a counsel conviction or that he properly waived counsel.
Dispute that you can use other documents to support a determination as to whether the defendant had counsel, do you?
Well, the court speaks through its orders, but I recognize that there is some case law that there's other ways of trying to prove a counseled conviction. But they showed that he had counsel at the disposition. They showed he had counsel at an earlier hearing prior to trial, but they didn't show on the date in question, the date that he enters his guilty plea. It only shows the defendant present and his mom present, no counsel present, and it is technically possible to enter a guilty plea in the absence of counsel, provided there, and that will be a valid order. But it can't be used as a, it doesn't carry a presumption of regularity for use in an enhancement, subsequent enhancement proceeding, unless it's shown that it was a counseled conviction or that there was no incarceration imposed or they waived counsel. So, but clearly, punishment, incarceration imposed here. It was suspended, albeit 30 days post-disposition detention.
But weren't there written notations on that very document?
On this document, I'm looking at page 26. All I see is what it shows is has the boxes for showing those present. Has juvenile, defendant, check. Mother, check. Attorney, not checked. And it says then he pled guilty to all charges, and the court then made a finding of guilty of all charges.
Isn't there a notation of public defender in the section that's labeled attorney ARW?
I'm sorry, I'm not seeing what you're on page 26 we're talking about.
Yes, sir.
There is the note later at the bottom of the page where the referring to the disposition hearing on November 19th, 08, where they have a checkbox for attorney is present, checked, plus the guardian ad litem. Apparently, the parent was not present at the disposition, so they had a guardian ad litem. That's the only thing I see, but that's referring, of course, to the sentencing proceeding. I'm afraid I'm not understanding your suggestion that there's a some sort of indication.
At the very top of that page, and you have to read it sideways.
Oh, I see that part.
It says public defender written in just above attorney ARW.
Right. Well, that's under the notation of the. It has 11-19-08. That's the disposition. And then it has Weisbrod is GAL for defendant. Then it says public defender. That's immediately above the line that says attorney. So that's just referring to the disposition. There was no guardian ad litem at the adjudicatory hearing on June 25th, 08. The GAL at the November, and that's what that refers to.
Why isn't there enough in the record for Judge Sugg to have concluded that because there's an attorney there for hearings prior to the adjudicatory date, counsel is present at the dispositional date, counsel appears to have been present at all stages in this, that it wasn't simply an inadvertent failure to check the box for the attorney of the adjudicatory date?
The trial court is not allowed to engage in conjecture or surmise about...
Is that a reasonable inference more so than speculation?
Well, it's conjecture...
Based on the presumption of regularity.
I would submit it's pure conjecture that he actually had counsel present on June 25th, 2008, when the record on his face, and the court speaks only through its order, is there was no counsel present on that date. And moreover, there is no presumption of regularity that attaches to that order where, according to the James case, they failed to first show that it was a counseled conviction or a proper waiver of conviction. So the presumption of regularity does not arise until that is shown. And, in fact, the defendant properly objected to the admission of the order and said, the order on its face says no counsel. This is, therefore, not admissible as a counseled conviction that may be used to enhance punishment.
How do you distinguish this case from the Samuels case?
In the Samuels case... In the Samuels case, there was
well, maybe you can check it for rebuttal and get back with us.
Yes, sir. Yes, Your Honor. But I would note that in the Samuels case, they did have the name of the attorney written. It didn't identify him as attorney, but said Joe Duvall. And they said the fact that the name Joe Duvall was written beside the judgment order section of the warrant, where the judge's name and disposition of the case both appeared, further supports the finding that Duvall appeared as trial counsel for Samuels.
One might argue that that's less clear that Joe Duvall is defense counsel than a notation public defender, PD, and the initials.
There was nothing in my case, in this case, where there's a showing that anyone appeared as counsel for the defendant on June 25th, 2008, the date of the adjudicatory hearing. In that case, though, they did have, although it didn't really it identified Joe Duvall as the attorney for counsel, there was this evidence that where a trial court could reasonably conclude that there was, in fact, counsel present at the trial court proceeding. But that's absent in this case. There is no notation of the name of an individual who appeared at the hearing on June 25th. Therefore, that's certainly a difference.
Just to make sure you're aware, you're in your rebuttal time. It's up to you.
I will sit down. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Tyson?
Good morning. May it please the court. In response to a question, on page 19 of the appendix, the trial judge in this case found, it appears to this court that there's a Scribner's error. The box was inadvertently left blank based on the evidence that's presented in the packet and the code section. I'm going to allow it. I think that's a finding by the trial court that counsel was present at the adjudicatory hearing for the defendant in this case.
And what say you about such finding being purely conjecture or speculation?
Oh, Your Honor, it's not purely conjecture. And based on, and even as the judge said, based on the packet of information that came up with the juvenile court, I think it's important that there's really two prongs here. There's the presumption of regularity, and then there's the additional evidence. And this case, fortunately, has both of those things. And let me talk first about the additional evidence. And in the appendix, page 26 through 28, really the important pages of this appendix. And I would suggest that the fact that public defender is written above a line that says attorney A appointed, R retained, W waived, is significant. But even if we didn't have that, the evidence
and
that...
Just to be clear, which document is that on?
This is on the adjudicatory disposition record of proceedings. This is the page that covers the adjudicatory hearing and the disposition hearing. Now, the additional pages are documents that are labeled court record of proceeding and court orders. Our circuit court judge here referred to those as notes. But this, and you know, it's on there too. The public defender notation is on that one, and it's on the last one as well with regard to this case. So if we look at the notes, and I think under Samuels and Tweedy, this court is allowed to look at something other than just the order. The reason I say that is that in Samuels, it was important that Joe Vaughn, or Joe, his name just, thank you, skipped my mind, had filed, maybe it was a motion for continuance. And that was considered pertinent evidence, relevant evidence, in deciding that he, in fact, represented this defendant. In the Tweedy case, which was Mr. Drury up in Amherst, he had filed a timesheet. And there was one other, and maybe a notice of appearance, or there was some other document. Oh, no, the court had appointed him. He filed a timesheet. That was pertinent evidence. That was relevant that, in fact, that attorney had represented the defendant at the DUI hearing. So we have, in this case, the appointment of the public defender in February. And then we have the noted appearance of the public defender February 26th. March the 18th, April the 30th, May 21st, August 20th, September 3rd, and then there's no box checked on June 25th, and there's no question about that, and then at the disposition in November. So this trial court in the Juvenile Domestic Relations Court in Hampton made sure that this defendant had counsel at all of these hearings. And in fact, this court was so careful with the rights of this defendant that when his mother did not appear, she couldn't come because of a conflict, the court appointed a guardian ad litem and continued the case. So it is not conjecture or surmise, but a truly reasonable inference that a court that has done this would not convict when counsel wasn't present. Now, that's the additional evidence piece of this. The presumption of regularity piece of this is that we have an order from the court that shows that this defendant was found not innocent as a juvenile and received a sentence. I think the James case really addressed, while it discussed counsel being present and the validity of the order, James really addressed whether a prior guilty plea was voluntary or not. That's the real issue in the James case. And the Samuels case and the Tweedy case and to a lesser extent some of the others, nicely Harris, discussed that when you've got the presumption of regularity, then the defendant can come forward with some evidence and say the reason that box wasn't checked is because there was nobody there representing me. That didn't happen. This document that's on page 26, as the trial judge here, the circuit judge found, contains an error. The box simply is not checked. There is no evidence that counsel was not present. The box simply was not checked. And there was no evidence presented to the circuit court that counsel was absent.
Which would have been awfully simple.
Yes, indeed, Your Honor, it would have been. And I noticed that in most of these cases, that's what happens. There isn't evidence presented that counsel was absent. There is simply this failure to put a check mark in the box. This case, I think, is even stronger than Samuels or Tweedy when you look at the other evidence that's available. The care that this court took to ensure that counsel was present at all of these hearings, ordered a competency evaluation, continued the case, appointed a guardian ad litem, that this court was, the circuit court was certainly reasonable and found, made a very reasonable inference that counsel was present at the adjudicatory hearing on June the 25th. In common parlance, it makes no sense that a trial court in the Juvenile and Domestic Relations Court would go forward and convict a defendant when we have all of this other evidence of the great care and protection of that defendant. And, you know, perhaps a response to that would be, well, it doesn't matter if it makes sense, we've got to have a record. Well, I think what Samuels and Tweedy, which is unpublished, stand for is that there's a difference between making a reasonable inference based upon the records that you have before you and speculating and surmising. And in this case, we have both prongs of the regularity, the presumption of regularity that is not rebutted, and the additional evidence that we have clearly on the records that came up to the circuit court. And for those reasons, the circuit court here did not err, did not abuse its discretion in determining that this order was a valid order and it satisfied the requirements that this defendant had previously been convicted of a felony, and thus the evidence was sufficient to go forward with the charge of possession of a firearm by a convicted felon. This record is more than adequate. The trial court did not abuse its discretion, and we would ask this court to affirm the judgment of the Circuit Court of the City of Newport News.
Thank you very much. Any rebuttal, Mr. Hayden?
Yes, Your Honor. The court had asked what the difference was between this and the Samuels case. Another difference was that the section of the warrant, the DUI warrant, there was a notation that of Joe Duvall that was designated, which appeared, notation Joe Duvall,
next to judgment of the court. And this was a section where disposition of the case was noted. They also had the fact that the name Joe Duvall was written beside the judgment order section of the warrant, and where the judge's name and disposition of the case both appeared. So that's something that's different. As I noted, in this case, the court may not engage in conjecture or surmise in determining the offense that the defendant was convicted of. If he pleads guilty and the order says he pled guilty without counsel, well, the court's order is presumed to correctly reflect what actually transpired and nothing more. So what the court says in the Palmer case. And what the order says is that he had an uncounseled conviction, that he just enters a guilty plea in which he and his mother are present. And that's the presumption of regularity. The principle that every act of a court of competent jurisdiction shall be presumed to have been rightly done, that's the presumption, and unless the contrary appears. It's certainly conjecture to say that, it must have been that there really was counsel present, and I know for a fact it could not have been that he just pled guilty in the absence of his counsel. I don't want to come back to court another. I just want to get this over. I'm pleading guilty today, and does that. I would note no presumption of regularity may be given to a judgment order with respect to portions of the order that are facially irregular. With the place on the order specifically printed, a place to require the judge to denote the presence of counsel, which was not completed. Unlike the Nicely case, which had a transcript in which there was in regular form, proper form, proved no incarceration, the judgment order in this case proved incarceration and clearly failed to denote the presence of Mr. Kim's counsel. Therefore, presumption of regularity does not apply to an order that's attempting to use an enhanced punishment for an uncounseled conviction. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll step down and greet counsel and then take up the case of Granado versus the Commonwealth.
All right.